Hi, this is Michelle Anderson. I'm here at the Country Diner in East Millinocket with gubernatorial candidate Peter Mills.
Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning, Peter. How are you?
Good. We got up at 3 o'clock this morning. We went and met about 200 people at the East Millinocket Mill. Good folks.
Let me start by asking you this. Why would I want to vote for Peter Mills as opposed to the other six?
Well, the first reason is I can win in November. It's a major thing to know. I think most of the newspapers said that I would have been governor for the past 4 years if I'd been nominated last time. I almost made it last time, came within 2,400 votes of being nominated. I got beat by a great guy, Chandler Woodcock, but Chandler wasn't able to pull it off in the general. Second thing is we need a Republican governor, and I felt that for an awful long time. Last time we had one was Jock McKernan, and there were permanent changes made in our state government that have stayed with us. I mean, he overhauled the state pension system, and he overhauled the workers' compensation system. And he got Maine's workers' compensation system off the front page of the Wall Street Journal so that, you know, businesses would feel more secure about coming here. Those were major shifts. The pension overhaul that he helped to orchestrate is saving Maine people, Maine taxpayers, I'm going to guess around $100 million a year, every year, and has ever since he left office, and will continue to do so in perpetuity. So we're in the middle now of another recession, worse than the one that Jock had to live through. And it's important that this crisis, that we respond to this crisis appropriately by making making some permanent overhauls and changes to the way the state does business. A couple of things I have in mind. I take the pension system and make it more portable. One of the biggest problems in working for state government right now is you start work at age 22 and they want you to stay there till you're 62. Well, nobody does that. Your kids don't do that. Mine don't. I have a daughter who's a teacher, and she's worked in 5 states and 3 countries now so far. So the idea that a teacher in Maine has to be trapped in a pension system and thus trapped in that employment is bad for the employer, and it's bad for the employee as well. So we need to overhaul that system.
So you mean if I was, say, a teacher in Millinocket and I decided I wanted to go teach in Augusta, I would carry with me my seniority
Actually,
and everything?
Well, we do have portability within Maine. That is, if you're in the teaching profession here in Maine, your pension rights do carry from one district to another. But the problem is if you move here from out of state, or if you decide to leave teaching and go sell real estate or run a store or something, then all of a sudden you're into Social Security, and Maine does not provide Social Security benefits for any of its state employees or teachers. So if you have a mixture of Social Security benefits with a state pension benefit, one offsets the other, and you can lose a substantial amount of your Social Security if you try to retire with a partial benefit either way. The short answer is there's very little portability into the real world. There is, of course, from the University of Maine. They cut loose in mid-1960s, and they got out of the state pension system, and so they are free to move and work at the University of New Hampshire or Bowdoin or whatever, and then go back into the university sector, and their benefits are freely portable. But one of our biggest problems with personnel management in state government is it's very hard for somebody to leave once they've been in there for a long time, and then the supervisor feels sorry for them, and even if they're not performing well, they're reluctant to make the hard decision about asking them to leave. And so you have rigidity in personnel policy. Very protective in one sense, but on the other hand, a lot of people who work within the system are dissatisfied with it, deeply dissatisfied with it, because many of them have Social Security credits they've earned elsewhere, and they don't count for much once they retire if they're relying on a state pension. It's a long topic, but I put a bill through 2 years ago that got passed that asked the pension retirement system to design a wholly new system for new hires. And so the system has been designed. Now I've got to get that system enacted by the state legislature, and I think it's going to have to be done as governor. I don't think I can get it through necessarily as a state senator. I think it has to be made a priority by the next governor, and by a governor who understands it, and that would be me. So there's one big issue. There are many other things. I think that in human services and in corrections, our whole system tends to reward state employees for expanding their duties and their jobs. The more people you bring into social services and welfare, the more people who are dependent on state services, the more important your job is, because you've got more people to take care of. And the same is true, it's simpler to understand, perhaps, in the pension system. The more prisoners there are, the more jobs there are for wardens, and the more that the wardens can justify getting a bigger salary. Well, the job of a corrections department is to correct people and have fewer people coming in over time. The job of working in human services, in at least many of the bureaus, is to help people become independent. And if you're doing your job well, you have less to do every month than you did before. But how do you reward people, or recognize them at least, for those achievements? So this has to come from the top. It has to come from the governor's office.
How do you fix that, though? I mean, clearly, if you have 10,000 prisoners in a place, and then in 10 years you have 2,000, people are going to lose their jobs. So how do you reward them?
Well, you have to start by forcing the system to count these things. That sounds simple enough, but it's not. You need to get frontline welfare workers to talk to you and keep statistics about how many people are rendered independent of the system. And then, I don't know whether you start with gold watches or red stars or something, but you have to have a chief executive who cares about that and whose bureau chiefs care about it. Those people who do well at it, you keep, and you lay off the ones who aren't doing well at it, maybe. That's one approach to it.
Mm-hmm.
The state employee, I was, I think, the only Republican who went down to be interviewed by the state employee policy committee 4 years ago. And it was a pretty scary thing. I walked into a room, and there was 60 or 70 people on that committee. I had no idea there was so many of them. And I took a deep breath, and they said, "So what's your plan for state employees, Senator Mills, if you become governor?" And I said, "Well, I think there would be fewer of you, and the ones that are left might be paid better." And that seemed to cause a little stir.
But they didn't lynch you.
No, they said they actually sort of respected that perspective. The thing that's being done in a few other states, at least, is that that governors are insisting that important things be counted. You have to recognize that government doesn't operate on a profit and loss basis. That's how the rest of the world keeps score. Every Monday I get a report on my desk explaining what we took in at my law firm for revenue last week and what the expenses were, and I can figure out how that compares with last year and how we're doing, and make adjustments if we need to, and and how we're doing business. But the state government doesn't have that. It's based on, it's hard to say what it's based on. It starts with the budget, and then the programs flow out of it. And sometimes the programs are successful, and some of them are not. Some are worth expanding, and some are worth shrinking. But the only way you can tell is by asking the right questions, like, what is the product that's being delivered? What is the outcome that you're seeking? What do you think the taxpayers want? Taxpayers, quite frankly, want less of it, whatever it is. Or they want it done more successfully. We have a huge problem in this state with abused opioids and narcotics, and it kind of came into the state in the mid-1990s when it was popular to say that nobody should be in pain, and that anybody who's got a pain problem ought to have a treatment for it. That's a noble goal, but some of the treatments that were rather hastily recommended were OxyContin and Vicodin, some of these drugs that are very powerful narcotics. And a certain number of people over time became highly dependent on them. And the child protective workers in my county, in Somerset County, formed a group about several years ago, a task force, because we found that so many babies were being born addicted to narcotics, 17 of them last year in Somerset County, over 400 in the state of Maine. And so many of the child protective cases now are those that involve the abuse of narcotics by the parents. That wasn't so 15 or 20 years ago. It was alcohol, yes, marijuana, somewhat, physical abuse, poorly educated people sometimes being brutal to their children. But nowadays, 80% of the cases that are coming through the Somerset Child Protective Office are cases that in one way or another involve the abuse or overuse of prescribed narcotics. It bothers me deeply that we seem to have people coming into my county who come from away, Massachusetts, let's say, and they come up here with a diagnosis of low back pain. Maybe they had an industrial injury and they've got a slip disc, and so they've got some competent physical cause for them to say, I'm in pain, and they can get a heated apartment for $400, and I'm sure they can do the same thing in Millinocket. And then if they find one of the doctors in town who is regarded as an easy touch for pain medication, if they get a Medicaid card, they establish a relationship to that physician under the Medicaid system, and then they buy drugs on the Medicaid card, and then they take the same pile of medical records and they go off and find another doctor who will treat them for cash so that Medicaid doesn't keep track of it. And then they go out and buy drugs for cash. And so they have two flows of narcotics coming into the household. And they are selling this stuff for $1 a milligram. Some of these pills, a single pill is 40 or 80 milligrams. So you can make a pretty good living in a way that is highly disturbing to the community. We have some of the smaller towns in Somerset County where the culture has been pretty well destroyed by the influx of narcotic drugs. I introduced a number of bills 2 years ago to try to bring this epidemic under better control. I had some success. It's a complex topic, but if I were governor, there would be a lot more done about it. So, what else do you want to talk about?
I can't remember the LD number, the tax.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm very proud to be, I think, the only Republican who actually voted for LD 1495. I did so for what I think is a noble reason. I think we need to reduce the capital gains tax in Maine. We need to reduce the tax on earned income. We need to reduce the tax on working. If working is the thing we most prize and the thing that we want our government to promote, why are we putting such a high tax on income and then not taxing other things that are less good for you? So I thought that the bill, at least fundamentally, was sound. I'll be the first to recognize that there's no such thing as a perfect tax bill. Probably never will be. But most of the economists who have looked at our tax system have advised us over many years to broaden the base of the sales tax and reduce the tax on capital gains and on income so that people who have money to invest won't be punished for doing it here, and that people who work here will be not punished for working here. So I felt very strongly about that. I will be the first to agree with anybody who says that there are problems with that bill or defects in it, but I think there are things that could be corrected, and I'd be happy to try to fix them if I'm elected governor. I think, to be candid with you, I think that that bill will be supported by my Maine people, and so I think it'll be up to the next governor to make further adjustments to tax policy. I fully sympathize with those who say it's too bad that we are taxing the repair of automobiles. I understand that that's in that bill. Not my favorite part of it, certainly.
That concludes the first half of my interview with Peter Mills, Republican gubernatorial candidate. Check back next week for part two of our interview to see what Peter believes he can do to help the people of Maine and those of us who live north of Bangor.